Blind Cool Tech, September 16th, 05. We're in Dallas at a really important meeting, and I'm talking to Skip Stahl and Chuck Hitchcock from CAST. And I should tell you guys, the audience for this is really the end user, a blind consumer. And what I'd like to do is try to cover what the implications of this are. I know, you know, we've been focused in these meetings about the Access Center and the authorized entities, but if we could, I'd like to talk about what this is going to mean to the, you know, the person at the end of the line that's going to get this textbook. And but can we start off with you guys telling us a little bit about yourselves and about CAST?
Sure. I'm Skip. I'm one of the founders of CAST, so I've been there for, it's over 20 years now. My background's in special education and teacher training. And I got interested in accessible instructional materials when I was doing a lot of professional development with teachers and discovering the thing that everybody seemed to be doing was transforming textbooks into accessible versions, and it was all happening for the most part at the local level. And it just seemed to me that there was ongoing redundancy, inefficiency, inaccuracies, where everybody was trying to retrofit materials. And so I got really interested in trying to facilitate and find a way to help move this towards a more centralized, nationalized approach.
Hmm. And I'm Chuck. I've been at CAST since the early 90s in a variety of roles. Some people know me because I developed this thing called the CAST e-reader, which is a talking browser that's been used a lot by people who need reading supports. It's not a screen reader, but a speaking browser that does synchronized highlighting. And others know some of my early development work around Bobby, and which is now with a company called WatchFire, a web accessibility validation tool, which was really intended because it's my background as an education tool, not as a validator, and it's sort of evolved into a validator. And over time, my interest in ensuring that we had the right balance of the tools to get to accessible materials and making sure the accessible materials were available as a balance has grown. And so right now, as director of the Technical Assistance Center for NIVIS, my focus is a little less on the tools and a bit more on ensuring that we have accessible materials available to a wide range of students who have print disabilities. And we'll probably get a little more into some of the advantages of using a NIMIS approach.
I hope we do. Gosh, Chuck, I wish I'd have known that about you earlier. I didn't realize you were the guy behind Bobby or the developer of that e-reader. I've checked out that e-reader. It's quite impressive.
Oh, thank you. Glad to hear that.
And so what is CAST? What does that stand for?
Well, it's the Center for Applied Special Technology. I always make sure to say it in the singular. And it's CAST work at this time. If people were to look in from the outside and ask what we do mostly, it's universal design for learning. It's hard to, we don't really have an elevator talk about that,
but
we probably should. But it's an approach to really looking at what can be done to make the goals, the methods, the materials, and the assessments more usable by all learners, so that the barrier is not the curriculum itself in a school setting, but instead begin to resolve some of the issues around inaccessible materials, learning materials that actually don't support learning in the ways we think they should, or even goals that are stated in ways that present barriers to students. And of course, the assessments, especially important these days with No Child Left Behind, ensuring that the assessments are usable by all students and provide a real reflection of what they know, not a reflection of the kind of supports they need to actually get to the test content and respond to those tests. But we're sort of a balanced organization. Skip will say a little more, I'm sure, but we're balanced in that we're about half research and half development. So we're known mostly as an R&D. We're a not-for-profit organization. Our funding is an interesting mix of federal research projects coming partly from the Department of Ed, but also a little bit from NIH and NSF, from private foundations, and some product royalties and work we do with publishers as well.
I'm trying to think if I want to add anything, but that was pretty complete. We're about 55 people these days. We started out quite small. There were only five of us. It was all part-time, and now we're in a bigger space. And we spend a lot of time. A lot of the work that I do is kind of evangelism around accessible instructional materials, particularly the NIMAS initiative, and because I really have a firm belief that it's going to profoundly and fundamentally change the way materials are provided, to particularly for blind or visual individuals.
That is exciting. What I guess we should probably tell people, what does NIMAS stand for?
NIMAS stands for the National Instructional Materials Accessibility Standard. It was a standard that was recognized formally by the United States Department of Education last summer, July 27th of 2004, and then actually it might have been 2003, but in any event, it was incorporated into the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act as a mandate for state and local education agencies, and that occurred in December of 2004. So it started out as a voluntary initiative to see if we could achieve a standard for source files, publisher source files, and then evolved into what's now a national mandate. So it kind of took a major leap forward in terms of its impact.
And how did CAST get involved with sort of spearheading this whole NIMAS movement?
We had a strong relationship with the Office of Special Education Programs, which is a division of the U.S. Department of Education, through having had a number of research grants and a National Center on Accessing the General Curriculum. Under the umbrella of that National Center, which is just actually finishing up 6 years of work right now, under that umbrella, we had asked for a supplement at one point to do a pilot program with specialized accessible materials in schools, and to develop an approach that has since sort of evolved into parts of NIMAS. And then we were asked by the department at some point whether we would consider spearheading an effort to develop the accessibility standard. What that meant was, of course, that we wouldn't develop a standard ourselves, but that we would be funded as a supplement to our national center to bring together experts who knew about these things and to coordinate the effort to agree on a national standard, and that's what we did.
So the fundamental problem was essentially that there was a lot of duplication of effort, like you were saying, Skip, where everybody was doing the same textbook over and over, and it was coming to them in a multitude of different file formats or scanning or whatever.
Absolutely.
And the idea here is now let me let you explain it.
Well, the idea is, as much as you said, that the producers, developers of alternate format materials, whether it's Braille or digital talking book or large print, never really knew what they were going to get. They might have to start with the print book. They might get Microsoft Word files or Quark or PDFs, and in most cases, probably chunks of all of those, and have to then use that kind of unpredictable and impractical source content to then create subsequently Braille or audiobooks or large print. And our estimation, and a lot of others, was that if there was a single consistent source file that was provided by publishers to all of those organizations doing that subsequent work, that it would accelerate. It would mean that the content would be a lot more accurate, and two, creating subsequent Braille editions or audio editions or large print would be facilitated by knowing the people working on it would know what the source file would look like, and it would be relatively predictable and hopefully valid and consistent. And so the goal was to get content developers, publishers, educators, a whole bunch of people together to agree on a standard specification, and that specification is what's known as XML-based. XML is extensible markup language, but it's a way of structuring a digital file, electronic file, so that the content is separated from the way it's presented, and that file contains elements or tags or indicators that describes what the content is. And so what we're now in the process of doing is we have a kind of baseline consensus of where we should be starting, which is NIMUS version 1.0. And we're now in the process of looking at the ways in which that really is going to be a major leap forward and the ways in which it needs to be augmented and expanded to really meet the needs of all learners.
Let me make just a couple other points. One is that the NIMUS elements, the elements that are used to actually mark up the content, represent more than half of the elements in Digital Talking Book, the ANSI NISO DAISY book standard, for 2002, and we proposed to the U.S. Department of Ed that it be updated now to the 2005 set of elements. So what this means is that with a little additional work, you have the XML content file and the structure necessary to make a DAISY book with some additional components. Secondly, it also means that the content which is delivered, and I think Skip referred to this, is likely, because it came directly from the publisher, is likely to be far more accurate than that of a local scanner or some third-party scanning service, just using a spell checker on the content, for example, and grammar checkers. The other thing I want to emphasize is that we think this will result in higher quality materials, and secondly, that they'll be delivered more quickly. However, there are some bumps. It's going to take a little while to get everybody up to speed on the technology and the tools that are necessary for making this happen. But the other aspect of this is that this is a better deal for publishers also, partly because what the publishers have to deal with now are thousands and thousands of individual requests. And as Skip said, that many of those requests result in Word files or ASCII or PDF. It's so much better if the publishers can focus on a single standard and sort of adapt their workflows so that that product required, the NIMUS conformant file set, actually is exported out of their normal workflow. And that's the direction it seems to be working, so that it's not a big deal. It's not an extra thing now that they have to do. It's simply part of the process, the production process.
So they've bought into this.
You bet.
Yeah,
completely. More than that, they've been very supportive and have been members of the working committees.
They have. I'm amazed at how supportive they've been. What's the time frame? Like, when can a student? I guess we should point out too, this is all starting out with K through 12 content as a first step.
That's correct.
But when can we expect? When will a student, say in the 11th grade, be able to take advantage of all this work that you and we all have been doing over the last several years?
Well, there's another component of this that we've not really described, and it's this: the establishment of a national repository at the American Printing House of the Blind, described as a national instructional materials access center. And as you well know, Larry, that center is targeted to be up and running to pull these files in, as we understand it now, about December 2006. So it would be shortly after that that some significant number of these files would be made available to authorized entities, third parties who are qualified to accept those files and convert them into various formats required by students with disabilities. So the timeline is, it's at least another year before we see really the beginning of the building of a national repository of these files.
But I will say that everybody involved in this process, from educators to publishers to states, are in the process right now of looking at ways to begin to ramp up and prepare for this availability or potential availability as of a year from December. And obviously there's a lot of kinks and issues that need to be resolved before then, but our target is that we'll begin to see some of these files made available kind of halfway through 2006, and hopefully as that begins to expand, then those files will increase in availability as they move forward.
So we should point out, too, I guess, that an 11th grade student in Dallas Public School is not going to be able to just download this from APH. What's the process that they would use to get their textbook for that year of school?
Well, the process would be the same as the one they use now. So it's not like we're turning everything upside down. What we're really doing is making more efficient and accurate the front-end part that ensures that there's a highly structured, accurate, workable, flexible file that then can result in the development of a BOSS Braille, or a Freshman Braille, or a talking book, or even accessible HTML, if that's a preference. In fact, it's not difficult to bring these files into Microsoft Word if that's a preferred use for the screen reader for an older student.
Right.
So there are quite a few options, but on the student user end, actually the systems for delivery are pretty much as they are now. And we'll certainly want to make sure that not to disrupt the delivery systems that have been years and years in the making.
Right. So our average student is still going to use RFB&D, possibly Bookshare, possibly even APH. And also, I guess there's a process where an individual school can become an authorized entity, or is that still a little unclear?
I think that's unclear at the moment. Everything goes back to the mandates or confines of the Chafee Amendment to the copyright. Right now, that identifies nonprofit organizations or governmental entities whose primary mission is the transformation of inaccessible instructional inaccessible materials into accessible versions. And so, if you take a strict interpretation of that designation, a local school district probably would not qualify as an authorized entity. However, a state instructional materials center or an entity that was designated by the state to perform that specific task would likely qualify. So we envision that it would be unusual for a local education agency, like a district or a school, to actually be the point of disbursement of these files, but at the state level it might be an instructional materials center or the other organizations that you just mentioned.
Okay. Well, I see people are starting to gather in here, and I know you guys are really busy. Is there anything you want to conclude with?
I just want to say thank you to everybody who's interested in this process, who's interested in making comments. We have a website at http://nimas.cast.org, and we will also encourage people to email us at nimas@cast.org, and we like to incorporate comments and concerns and wishes and hopes from anyone who cares to contribute.
Great. Right. How about you, Chuck?
That was a good wrap.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for helping us get the word out.
And thank you guys.
All right.